All right, so I think we're going to get started. My name is Ann Dozier. I am currently the section chair for maternal and child health, and we are pleased to put together this forum in honor of Martha May Elliott, many of whom you in the audience probably don't know who Dr. Elliott was. So I'm going to give you just a few tidbits about her life before we proceed into the start of the forum. As I mentioned, there is a sign-up sheet going around, and our structure today will be that we'll have our speakers go, I'll introduce them, they will go in sequence, and we'll be holding questions to the end, and the question period is actually intended to be an opportunity for interaction with the audience, so we look forward to your questions about this. So for those of you who are in the Martha May Elliott luncheon, you already heard part of this, so sorry. So Martha May Elliott was a pediatrician associated with the Children's Bureau for over 20 years. When criticizing her role and the influence of the Children's Bureau, and even when noting her remarkable achievements, commentators frequently question her authority as an unmarried expert on child health. I keep thinking about this from a breastfeeding contest, and people think that if they breastfed once, they're experts. So they actually criticized her that she hadn't had a child, so what did she know about maternal child health beyond the fact that she was a pediatrician? We won't go there. Anyway, she went on to receive many, many honors, including the Pediatric Society's John Howland Medal in 1967. She led the Children's Bureau. She was part of, during World War II, she did looked at the impact of children, or the impact of war on children. She also was a leading figure in emergency maternity and infant care in this country. And then she served in the World Health Assembly and was the only woman to sign the founding document of the World Health Organization. She also served as the Assistant Director General of the WHO, one of the few women ever to hold such a high office as a public health in a public health agency, and faced a lot of intense scrutiny, and despite her qualifications, and she was called in a newspaper headline, the spinster in steel specs, advisor in maternity. She left the Children's Bureau ultimately in 1956, became chair of the Department of Child and Maternal Health at the Harvard School of Public Health, and after her retirement in 1960, continued to work for the WHO and UNICEF. In 1947, she was the first woman to be elected president of the American Public Health Association, hence her honor here that was bestowed on her and the establishment of an award in her name in 1964. She died in 1978. So this forum and the luncheon that we had preceding this is in her honor. So I want to speak now about the people who are going to be talking today. So Megan Renner has served as the executive director of the U.S. Breastfeeding Committee since 2004, stewarding collaborative efforts to advance policy and practices that create a landscape of breastfeeding support. She leads their work to provide strategic and policy guidance to the field with a focus on collaboration building and engagement and the application of a collective impact model on a national scale. She previously served as the executive director of the Institute of Management Consultants USA and the Museum Trustee Association, and is deputy director COO of the Lamaze International. She holds a bachelor's degree in government and international studies from the University of Notre Dame. Our second speaker will be Erin Bosson. Erin is the associate director of Women's and Infant Health at the Association of Maternal Child Health Programs. She works with partners and stakeholders and plays a critical role in fund development. She leads technical assistance efforts related to perinatal health, including management of grants and cooperative agreements. She completed a dual degree master's at UNC Chapel Hill, where she was a HRSA MCHB Leadership Fellow. She received a BA in psychology from SUNY Fredonia. Our third speaker will be Ellen Pliska. She's the Family and Child Health Director for the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. She completed a Master's of Health Science at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, Bachelor's of Arts at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Advanced Social Media Certificate at the University of San Francisco. Our next speaker will be Catherine Sullivan. Catherine is a clinical instructor and deputy director of CGBI in the Department of Maternal Child Health at the Gillings School of Public Health at UNC Chapel Hill. CGBI is the Carolina Global Breastfeeding Institute. She's a registered licensed dietitian and an IBCLC with 20 years of public health nutrition and breastfeeding experience. She serves as a course coordinator for the Mary Rose Tully Training Initiative. Mary Rose Tully, for those of you who don't know, is a former member of the American Public Health Association and would certainly have been proud that we had a breastfeeding forum now. Catherine facilitates the National Collaborative for Advancing the 10 Steps and serves as a breastfeeding expert on CDC's Empower Breastfeeding Initiative. And our last speaker, Nikia Fuller Sankofa, she's a non-profit professional, duly trained in public health and policy, committed to the development and delivery of family-centered support services to communities through research-driven programming informed by community input and collaborative partnerships. She currently serves as the project director of a CDC funding Reducing Disparities in Breastfeeding through Peer and Professional Support Project at the National Association of County and City Health Officials. So we'll start off with Megan and proceed with all speakers and then conclude with questions from the audience and hopefully a fair amount of interactive discussion.
Thank you, Anne, and good afternoon to everyone here. I am thrilled to be with you today and to lead off this illustrious panel here. I have to first just say how amazing and exciting it is when Anne and I first hatched the idea for the session over a year ago, and even just as Anne said, the concept of having a forum all about breastfeeding and also having these fabulous public health organizations all engaged in breastfeeding and funded in breastfeeding is just a win. So a quick Yahoo to start to be here today. So I'm going to lead us off talking about how at USBC we are building a grassroots to treetops movement for breastfeeding change. And of course, first I have no relationships to disclose. So just quickly, a little bit about what the heck is this USBC, the U.S. Breastfeeding Committee. We were created as an organization of organizations back in the mid-90s and stemmed out of this Innocenti Declaration at the World Health Organization and UNICEF. Today we have more than 50 members, including federal government, health professional associations, and other nonprofits who are working in some way for policy or practice change in breastfeeding. And also, since 2006, we began to convene and support a network of breastfeeding coalitions in all 50 states, territories, tribal organizations, and more recently, we began to expand this to local, community, and cultural coalitions. You may also be familiar with this lovely document. I like to think of this as our recipe for change or our roadmap in breastfeeding. In 2011, the Surgeon General issued this call to action on breastfeeding, calling on the six different sectors that you can see here to make changes. There's 20 different recommendations in these six areas. And you can either think of this as one big recipe for the nation. You can also really think of each of the six sectors or even each of the 20 actions as their own individual recipes. There's even that amount of strategy and suggestions and detail there. And the really critical part, we think, is that in action number 20, under public health infrastructure, the Surgeon General's document specifically calls on USBC and those affiliated state coalitions I mentioned as the lead partners in implementation, and specifically calls to increase our capacity to do so. We think this is really key. It's not just that this is another document putting out, these are all the things that need to be happening. Someone should do something. We talk about that a lot. But it also made allowances for the capacity to do that work and to really move the field along. This image might be less familiar to you. This is the socioecological model that was put out along with the call. So I like to think of this as our ingredients list, although it's a little bit more colorful than your usual recipe. It shows all of the major elements from the public health perspective that have to be involved in changing policy and practice around breastfeeding. And you can see that it starts at the center with the mother and baby, then the individuals in her environment in the red and the orange. The yellow sphere includes all of the different institutions that she might interact with, and then moving further out in the green, these are organizations that support the yellow. So, for example, you have the health professional organizations in the green that support the doctors in the yellow, or the public health organizations like APHA in the green that support the public health workforce. And then in the blue and the turquoise, you start to see the government entities, the funders, and some other major policymakers like Joint Commission, IOM, and of course USBC is up there in the upper corner. So again, I like to think of this as all of the ingredients that we need, because really we see that we need all of us. And what this means for us at USBC, we've really seen a lot of our success built on a variety of different pathways. There's been no one way to make policy change in breastfeeding, and this article here that I've linked called Pathways to Change, Six Theories, actually illuminates six different theories for how policy change moves ahead. From, we don't have time to go into it today, but everything from the power elites, the power politics, to coalitions of stakeholders coming together, to individuals at the grassroots level activating for change. And we believe that we need everyone across the spheres and sectors of the call to action, and also from the grassroots to the treetops, to maximize our impact in the breastfeeding movement. So what does USBC do in all of this? At our core, USBC focuses on providing backbone supports for the field. You can see a number of them here, from having developing a policy agenda to convening supports for different stakeholders to come together, communication support, coalition capacity building. We do all of these in the service of collaborative action teams of stakeholders. Again, we're an organization of organizations, so they can come together and have all of these supports. One of those backbone supports is mobilizing funding. And we do this not just in service of ourselves, but also really for the whole field. You can see on this slide the delineation of the CDC breastfeeding programs. USBC has been the primary lobbyist for that funding beginning in 2012 and has been continuing for the last several years, steady at $8 million a year. We also serve as a field builder, advising and supporting the Kellogg Foundation on their portfolio of over 70 First Food grantees. And we're reaching out to new foundations, really looking to build that capacity for the whole breastfeeding field. But of course, the most important part of this slide is these other partners here that will follow me and who will speak more about their work that is funded by CDC and Kellogg and beyond. Just a quick visual to show you at the state level what some of that CDC money is doing. There's actually three program strategies. Maternity care is the first one, and you can see here which states are specifically funded right now with the CDC money, as well as empower breastfeeding hospitals in different communities. Those are the stars, and we'll hear more about this from the partners. This next map shows you the states working on workplace. Again, with the CDC mechanism. You can find your state. And then the last one here is peer professional or community support. And the stars here are the NACHO-funded communities. We'll hear more about those from Nakia. So back to what USBC does with our CDC and Kellogg funding, very briefly. What we're doing with our new iteration of our Kellogg grant is focused in two areas. The first is around racial equity values and practices and building that muscle for USBC as well as the whole field. And the second is focused around our coalition capacity building, especially using technology and also applying collective impact principles with our state and local breastfeeding coalitions. These two links here will take you to our learning communities in those two areas, so please check those out if you're interested to learn more. Anybody can get a login, incidentally, to our website and join up to these learning communities, so if you're at all interested, please come and join us online. And with one of our CDC cooperative agreements, this one is focused on two of those three program strategies I showed you on the maps, the peer professional support and the worksite. And again, we are doing this work particularly to bring national stakeholders together and to be supporting national strategy and policy work around these areas. And these two links here would take you to our whole list of online learning communities, including ones focused on these particular topic areas, as well as an action directory where folks can input information about what they're doing in all the different topic areas, including professional peer and worksite. So do check those out, lots to learn and connect. And then with our other cooperative agreement with CDC, we have two strategies again. The first builds around building a web-based resource directory, a central place for moms to find their local breastfeeding resources. You can think about this as a Yelp. That's one way to think about it, but with the search features, not the goofy review. I know many people sometimes use those for restaurant reviews. If we're not going to do it that way, but more for the searching component to connect moms to their resources. And the other component is around capacity building assistance and our online learning for state coalitions. The two links here, again, are collective impact learning community and webinar series, and then also our conference for the coalition. So going a little bit deeper on the coalition capacity building side, one of the first things that we did with enhanced funding was to conduct an extensive needs assessment, including looking at the structural models of our coalitions and their current activities. You can see that many of them are working in the same areas that the CDC funding is going to. And really, all I have time to say today is that they have many, many needs, way more than we can support or can talk about in this day. We also have identified markers of effective coalitions, which lay out coalition development, and we're beginning to map these into an indicator on the CDC report card. I've already spoken a bit about the TA supports, conferences, webinars, networking, so I'll skip to my last slide here on lessons learned. Just a few highlights of our work with these funding sources. First of all, how critically important it is to really intentionally design and plan collaborative group composition and meeting design. We think of a learn, connect, impact model where we try to make sure we have some component of learning, connecting, and impact. You can think of that also with head, heart, hands in any meeting. Secondly, given all of this complexity and work to build coalitions, we really feel that it takes a lot of an effort and time and investment, and we believe that for major initiatives, investing in some of that backbone muscle can really help save money down the line. Thirdly, we also have really seen that you don't have to go all in on collective impact. You don't have to feel like you need to get a PhD to understand every bit of terminology. You can just do a little bit to apply principles and tools. I mentioned the needs assessment for coalitions before. One of the key learnings there is how we do need to build more infrastructure and support real dollar signs for the coalitions. And then lastly, as we've gone deeper into building the muscles of the field around diversity and equity and inclusion, a major lesson has been the importance of applying both an equity lens to inform and guide our strategies and activities, but also an equity mirror to look at our own internal structure and culture and policies. So with that, I will wrap up and switch to our next speaker here with many thanks.